The impressive Bernie Sanders three-sweep win was put on the back burner as Muslim radicals again launched another furious attack against innocent victims in Lahore, Pakistan. Of course, the count of 50 dead does not toll the survivors who will now spend months or years learning to walk again, being fitted with artificial limbs, dealing with loss of hearing and eyes, or come to grips with being completely crippled. For some survivors, death will seem preferable. Why exactly do Muslims believe that random murderous acts against non-combatants pleases God? How could the savage killing of men, women, and children with luggage filled with nails, for example, which thereby tears the legs of its victims to shreds, be part of the Lord's plan? Or how could rounding up groups of virgin teens and repeatedly raping them be a continuation of the work of Jesus, as the Muslims claim it to be? Didn't Jesus say, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you"? And where does Christ extol rape? Or how about the beheading and killing of non-believers? Where in the New Testament does the Messiah direct his followers to remove the heads of, blow up, drown, or shoot non-believers? So where is it taught that God is delighted by the torture, rape, or murder of those not saved? Is this not the craziest actions of a bloodthirsty cult totally at odds with the God of the universe, the one who created life, overcomes death, and sacrificed his only son on Easter to save the whole world, which we celebrated yesterday? In fact, in the same Bible the Muslims claim as their foundation, Paul writes the most famous statement in history on love, writing, "Love is patient, love is kind, and does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres." Of course, the famous 1 Corinthians 13 verses. And the Apostle John writes, "Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love." So where is the God of love in Islam? Friends, we have an emerging crisis on our hands. And whoever becomes the next president must wisely guide the world's free countries to take on the murderous horde known as ISIS and other radical Muslim killers, and not feel he or she is too busy or inconvenienced or indifferent about fighting to save civilization from going back to the dark ages. Will this happen in January 2017? It's too early to say definitively, sports fans. Good morning, 6:09. And the 28th of March, you've got to admit that is the most puzzling part of this whole Muslim commitment to blow other people up is, are they not the most religious people in the world? And how is it possible that their God is asking them to repeatedly kill even children? How does that further the kingdom of God? So, frankly, from my perspective, you cannot possibly say that that does. God is the total opposite of that. But be that as it may, we have a fight on our hands, so we need to return fire with fire just to save ourselves. And whether any one person claims that we are have an existential threat in Islam, it is clear now that we found out that they went in to Europe and shot a guy that worked at a nuclear power plant and stole his pass, that they would not be opposed to blowing up the entire Europe to make their point. All right, so I do have a little bit later for you something from who has got an analysis for why the Muslims act the way that they do. In the interim, we're finding out that the FBI is getting ready to interview Hillary Clinton over the email disaster. So that's in the midst of her being ahead in this presidential race. But I mean, you know, Sanders won three races out of three, and he won them not just by 55-45. He won them by 70% and 80%. In each place, Washington, Alaska, Hawaii. And so pretty amazing stuff, really. I mean, you can't tell from the delegate totals, because Hillary Clinton had so wrapped up these superdelegates that it's totally irrelevant. Totally irrelevant she would win or not, because she's got so many superdelegates. It's just absolutely ridiculous. But I just kind of couldn't help but wonder if she gets taken down, if she's seriously investigated, what would it take to really kind of push this thing out there? You know, get something going that would really affect her. And I think it's going to be an indictment. All right. So in the meantime, I've got a Beck watch. Now I'm going to be doing a little segment, Beckology, because Beck now has claimed that Cruz is the anointed one of his time. Ted Cruz was raised from birth to save this nation. Isn't that absolutely crazy? Just to hear that, I marvel. I have to admit that I marvel at this stuff. All right, so let me play some Shubat for you, because I think that when you hear this, it's going to make a little bit of sense. And this is a guy that was in the, I think he was in the Palestine Liberation Organization, but he had been recruited and was a member of Islamic terrorism. And this is a very long interview, so I'm going to play a little bit until we get through it the next week or two. But it is fascinating stuff. And Walid is Walid, and Shubat, it sounds like it is pronounced Shoebat. Here we go.
He participated in acts of terror and violence against Israel. He became disenchanted with the PLO as being too moderate, so he joined the Muslim Brotherhood. He was trained for jihad in America. In 1993, he was challenged by his Catholic wife, and Walid began to study the Bible as well as secular history. As a result, Walid came to realize that all he had been taught about Jews and Christians was a lie. He knows the Lord Jesus. He is a devout student of the Word of God, Old Testament and New Testament, has written several books. He's just a great guy to speak to be with, to read his material. It's very, very informative. And we are offering his book, Why We Want to Kill You, The Jihadist Mindset and How to Defeat It. He is well qualified to speak to us on ISIS, terrorism, and a host of related issues. Walid, thank you so much for being our guest.
You bet. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about ISIS. ISIS is in the news just about every day. Their cruelty is well known. In addition, there are ISIS sympathizers all over the world, including in America. So tell us about this organization. It seems like it just suddenly sprouted up like weeds in a garden.
Yes, there's a reason for it sprouting up suddenly. Number one, the United States decided to pull out of Iraq. And that basically gave the green light for groups like the group that basically became ISIS. It stemmed from Abu Mus'ab al-Zarqawi, a Palestinian Jordanian who basically split from Al-Qaeda, started his own group. And as the United States pulled out of Iraq, they began the bombardment issue of Syria, having a civil war in Syria created and mushroomed this whole thing. The side effect of all of this began the idea and the process of jihadists wanting not to fight entities that is Muslim. In other words, you had the Free Syrian Army, you had other organizations, and here they were fighting Muslims versus Muslims. Well, ISIS said, we will fight the coalition. And that began to basically magnetize the other fighters, like the Free Syrian Army and others, to join ISIS, because the idea was to fight against a foreign entity, a crusading entity, as they call it. And so ISIS mushroomed tremendously and began to expand into Syria, dismantle borders between Syria and Iraq. And so the idea of ISIS is, let's establish a caliphate now. The idea of, let's say, the Free Syrian Army, which is also a terrorist group, even though the U.S. supports that terrorist group because it wants to fight against Bashar al-Assad, their idea was to establish a caliphate later. Let's get a foothold into Syria. But they're the same makeup, whether it's ISIS, whether it's al-Nusra, whether it's the Free Syrian Army. It doesn't matter. All these groups are technically the same. They have an inspiration that they want to reverse what is called Sykes-Picot. Sykes-Picot was when the dismantlement of the Ottoman Empire happened, and the French, the Russians, the English, I guess they got together, and they said, let's divide this Humpty Dumpty called the Ottoman Empire into keeping it at bay. So they established what is called Arab nationalism. So nationalistic fervor grew in the Middle East. Of course, we had problems with nationalistic fervor, Arab nationalism, in which they began to fight against Israel, so on and so forth. But it was easily maintained because Arab nationalism tends to divide these states from each other. And ISIS and the Islamists want to basically combine all these states under a caliphate. So the infinite wisdom is to look at Arab nationalism as a more preferred means to keep this Humpty Dumpty we call the Islamic Caliphate at bay. So if you ask an Islamist, what do you want? He wants an Islamic Caliphate. Where is the central headquarters? Well, they differ. You know, ISIS wants to have a caliphate in Iraq and in Syria. So they have a Khalifa now, and his name is Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, and he doesn't have the basically the dynamo of the Muslim scholars. In other words, sure, you have a caliphate, but you do not have the backup of the brain, you know, behind Islam in entire region, and that is the Muslim scholarly community, the OIC, the Turkish government, you know, the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood, the Wahhabists in Saudi Arabia. None of them are standing behind this caliphate. And so it doesn't have the spiritual dynamo, if you will, but it's starting as an embryo. So it's a mini caliphate. And the Islamists on the other side, so we think that because, let's say, Saudi Arabia or other countries are fighting ISIS, that they are anti-caliphate. That's not true. What they want is a grand caliphate. And so Turkey, for example, wants to establish a grand caliphate. In fact, the Muslim Brotherhood, you have the spiritual head of the Muslim Brotherhood, Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi. He's really the spokesperson for everything, the scholarly realm, as well as the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a major intricate part in establishing a caliphate. It announced in August of last year that the caliphate headquarters must be in Istanbul, Turkey. So this is the grand caliphate. So Americans need to understand this miniature caliphate is basically a stepping stone. It's a chip that is being used by the grand caliphate agenda under the war on terror, under, you know, squashing ISIS. They are going to magnetize themselves and sprint forth in the future for a major caliphate. But we have other players. We have Iran as well. So we have a Shiite-Sunni divide. We can discuss that. But that's in a nutshell what ISIS has done.
All right. So that's Walid Shubat. And as you can tell, he knows a great deal about this. I have got Phil with me, my old buddy Phil. And we're going to come on in just a second and discuss some of the things that are going on. And Phil stopped me the other day and said, there's so much crap going on. I demand to come on your show. And it's like, we've been waiting for this, Phil. So we'll be, here's a little bit of live Al Green for you. One of my favorite performers of all time. Love and Happiness, 620 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, 1450, 523-1450 to call in. And you do have your text line as well, 805-6180. And we'll be right back. We're going to pick up and we're going to pick Phil's brain a little bit. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. We will be right back.
See, I want to know if there's anybody in the building familiar at all with love.
Ah.
Let everybody smile.
Well, folks, a special surprise here. My old buddy Phil is back, and as if you're a longtime listener, you remember there was a time that Phil was on the show every day, and actually Phil was actually originally just kind of marking time by answering phones for me. We found that we had a lot in common, and I really enjoyed insights and his additions to the show, so we ended up doing that for, what was that, for 6 months or so?
my mic up. There we go. Yeah, we have a different perspective sometimes on a lot of the things that we talk about and everything, but I think it makes it a little bit more objective when we discuss some of the subjects that we are going to discuss, like, for example, this morning.
Well, we had talked, and let's get some of the headlines out of the way, some of the horrifying headlines. ISIS did crucify the priest. His name is Father Thomas Antalil. He was taken by Islamist gunmen, and they had shot four nuns. And then they waited until Good Friday, and they did crucify him. So, you know, with the kind of people that you're dealing with here, some of the worst in the world, some of the worst in history. And I don't want to get into this now, but I mean, should these people be using the regular? I'll ask you, Phil. This is one of the hardest questions in the world right now for Americans. Should Islam be grouped as a traditional religion as we understand it?
Well, I think that's the problem that we have, is that we don't understand it. And a lot of folks out there are, you know, especially if you're on the liberal side, you know, you think that, you know, that Islam is you know, one of the oldest religions around, same as Christianity. And we think that, you know, that what folks out there should, you know, look at it in the same way. But unfortunately, you know, what has happened, in my opinion only, is that they've taken this religion and they've completely perverted it to the point where, you know, I don't even know if it is possible to understand from a Christian point of view what Islam is all about anymore. They've taken it and they really, really have perverted to some degree that it's, you know, it goes back to the medieval times when they used to, you know, the eye for the eye and
Lex Talionis.
Yeah.
The law of revenge. But here's the thing that I think I've been pondering this over the weekend, as all of these, you know, there's attacks across the world right now. There's one in Pakistan, 50 people are killed. There's another one in Brussels just a few days before, 35 or 40 people are killed. Go back. It gets to the point where you can't even remember all the attacks. But thinking about this, and I've come to the conclusion for myself, is something that I've known for a long time, but I kind of circled back to it. There is no Islam without jihad, and jihad is not an option. Jihad is not an option. If you're called to jihad, you have to help with jihad. Now, not everybody goes out and fights, but if you're called to jihad, you at least have to do something.
Well, I know that you know, one of the basic problems that you find in the Muslim religion or Islam is that a lot of the folks out there who maybe are considered what you consider moderates are not, you know, I just don't think they're coming out in full force and saying that, you know, this perverted Islamic state that they're talking about is, I don't know, it's like they're afraid to speak up. And
why is that?
Well, I mean, you know, apparently, you know, there's a lot of really close ties. You know, they're as a group of people, it seems to me like they're, you know, they're always seem to be related to one another. You know, but for example, a lot of these bombers that have happened here are now, they're starting to use, you know, brothers and brothers teams. Of course, they separate them so that they make sure that they're doing what they're told to do. It's, you know, it's.
You know what I think? I think that Islam does not allow for moderation, which is the reason that there's never been a reformation. And that's the reason that there is not there's never a change in Islam. For example, the judicial amputation, the removal of the hand or the foot for theft, has been around for 1,000 years or more, you know, and they don't have natural law. They don't have a law above their law. All they have is God's law, and it can't be abrogated. You can't turn judicial amputation, for example, into a 10-year prison sentence. If you want to, you know, if somebody steals a loaf of bread and you really want to teach them a lesson. So there is no updating Islam.
Well, that's a very good point, Kelly. And, I don't know. It seems like to me, like we've been fighting, not us necessarily, but that area of the world has been fighting the same battles for thousands of years. And I get to a point where I wonder if, you know, if we should just step aside and just let them take care of themselves. But then you turn around and then you see where they're expanding out, like what's happening in Europe, you know, with a lot of the refugees, which are, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they're, you know, they've been infiltrated with a lot of what they call ISIS or ISIL or whatever you want to call it. And we just, you know, this has got to be something that the world comes to terms with. And I honestly do not know what is the best action to take. I mean, you go in there. I mean, just recently we supposedly took out the number two ISIS leader. And but, you know, it's like, you know, wackadoo, you know, you take one out, another one pops up. So when you're fighting religion, which is something that has been going on for centuries, it just seems like it's almost an impossible task to win. You know,
well, I mean, but this is not like this is like totally different. And I think the only way that we're going to treat this, we're going to win this, is treated not as a religious issue, but as a war issue. Folks, let's take a break. We're going to come back and talk about what we had originally meant to talk about, which was the ridiculous situation in the Republican Party. Got Phil here. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450 and 805-61802 text. And we're going to be right back and talk about the dysfunction and the dismay, the treason in the GOP. We'll be right back to talk about that.
Love and happiness. Yeah. Wait a minute. Something's going wrong. Somebody's on the phone. 3 o'clock in the morning. Hey. Talking about.
All right, so Kelly here, and of course, it is 6:36, and it felt a little bit chilly last night. I mean, maybe just me, but the temperature right now is, according to my little thing here, is 55, so that's not too bad. But so Phil and I were talking about the show that you had yesterday. Phil is arguably the most popular broadcaster in the Mesilla Valley, which is another reason it's nice to have him on the show. Some of you will know him from being on 101 Gold, but you had a lot of fun yesterday.
And of course, you know, I was doing my show, Cruising and Cruises, which is basically a 6-hour show with requests and dedications. And it was a lot of fun. A lot of folks were calling in for requests and dedications. A lot of them were having a lot of partying, a lot of good times. And a lot of times I couldn't quite understand what they were saying. I guess they had been indulging a bit. And but it was a lot of fun. It really is.
Well, that's good. And I went up to Dripping Springs and was informed it was the most popular day of the year up there. So, which was kind of cool. You know, there was a lot of people up there. All right. So there's you and I were really kind of going at it, hammer and tongs on the GOP last Friday. And I said, you know, you got to bring this on the show. Or maybe you said I need some time on the show to talk about this.
Well, you know, I've been watching a lot of, you know, I've been kind of surfing the net, internet, and also doing a lot of watching as far as Fox, CNN, MSNBC, as far as what's going on in the Republican Party. And that's what happened. We were outside. We were talking out in the patio, and we were talking about how the Republican Party, as far as I'm concerned, is looking like they're trying to commit Harry Caray if they try to go to a contested convention here. And that's what the hopes are for people like Kasich and maybe even Cruz.
And then we got to point out, Harry Caray is not a disease.
No, it's not. It's self-inflicted.
Yeah, it's not something that is calling out for a topical cream here.
No. but, you know, we were discussing about what was going on with Trump and Cruz and Kasich and how they were using. Basically, I think Cruz and Kasich are in a blocking mode right now, trying to keep Trump from getting the amount of delegates that he needs, which is, I think, is 12.
All right, he needs 1238, and he's at 740.
740, right. So, and, you know, and still, he still has some big states to go through. I mean, he's got
California. Wisconsin's the main one. Yeah, in terms of, they're saying Wisconsin is the one that will decide what the rest of it looks like for Trump. If Cruz can't win Wisconsin, he needs to hang up his jockstrap.
Well, yeah, that's he's. You know, the thing is,
my brother used to joke, his rubber band and half a peanut shell.
Well, you know, this is the thing that gets to me about what's going on in the Republican Party. Now, I'm going to be honest. I'm an independent, and I'm just looking at trying to be as objective as possible of what's going on in the Republican Party. And what I see is that, you know, they are a lot of these folks who are now endorsing, for example, Cruz. Time and time again, while they were running against him, were just completely, you know, dogging him.
He was the one guy that got zero support from anybody in the Senate.
Well, you know, actually, he actually picked up one.
Mike Lee.
Yeah, is that who it
Mike
is?
Mike Lee's his best friend. You know.
So anyway,
that's like Cher voting for Sonny, you know.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, you're a senator, and no Republicans like to be even around you.
Yeah. They don't like the smell of your cologne.
I don't know what it is with Cruz, but anyways, you know, and that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing that they are trying to figure out a way how to stop Trump. And what I'm afraid was going to happen is if they do somehow go to a contested convention and they get one of the Kasich or Cruz to get in there and get the nomination or parachute somebody else in like Ryan. I think it's going to completely splinter the Republican Party.
What is it? You know, I played this clip for the folks before, but what does it tell you if we have a series of votes? We're at, you know, double voting in this country, voting for primaries and voting for generals. What does it tell people in the country if voting, by definition, doesn't matter because the party gets to decide who's going to run?
Well, I think that's going to disenfranchise a lot of voters, and I'm afraid what's going to happen is that you're going to find that a lot of the Trump supporters are just not going to go vote, and which is going to basically gift wrap the nomination for Hillary Clinton should she be the one to get into that position, unless, you know, the FBI indicts her, and it could be a whole different story. But I'm really, really just, I'm amazed about how the Republican Party can look at it and say, you know what, this guy had the most votes. He has the most states, and because he doesn't get to that magical number, all of a sudden now they can take all these delegates, who a lot of them are very, very loyal to the Republican Party, and they could so very easily switch if this gets into the second or third round of, you know, the contested convention. So,
you know what I find weird is this thing that the GOP acts like they've got this. They act like their BMW or their Cartier or something. They've got this incredible brand. And they're the one that owns the brand. They're the one who created it. And they can do whatever they want with it. And no matter what, there's inherent value in it. That is so wrong. You know, this is like what they're trying to do is make a bolognese a spaghetti sauce with horse meat.
That's quite an analogy. Now, I'm not familiar with any one of those bowls, but.
Well, folks, we'll be right back. We got Phil here. Lucky to have Phil here this morning, 6:42. He got up a little bit early. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450-805-6180. Reminds me of the good old days, Phil.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
We'll be right back.
Something going wrong. Someone's on the phone. 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Talking about how she can make it right. Yeah.
All right, so here with Phil, I'm looking at some of the headlines here. Paul Ryan moves stir White House talk. Paul Ryan, who ran last time as a vice president and said he's not interested, they're getting him ready to run, and but they're trying to primary him, a businessman who has been betrayed by the speaker. I don't know what it would be like to be so popular that you could get elected congressman or senator, let alone president, but it must go to your head, Phil.
The thing that I think is really interesting about what's going on, especially with Cruz, and I got to be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of Cruz, but a lot of the times, a lot of Republicans were really hammering Obama for being a one-term senator who really hadn't accomplished a whole lot. And I remember seeing an interview where they brought in one of Cruz's head honchos that was talking about his accomplishments, and short of I guess the what was that one thing he did where he talked for I don't know, like hours, really there wasn't a whole lot that he's accomplished.
Hasn't achieved a lot. He did a lot for Dr. Seuss, I believe.
Oh, okay.
green eggs and ham.
That's right. I forgot about that.
He probably did a lot for cuisine in America as well. But no, I mean, here's the thing that I've got. You know, I had this lady Donna who's absolutely attached to Ted Cruz, and he's a statesman, and everybody else is a politician. Although she would have voted for Marco Rubio, this guy doesn't seem like a statesman. He seems like a real oily politician.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that. My wife, who is a hardcore Republican, I guess I could pretty much say that she's a Trump supporter. She's basically said, and this is just in my household, who has said that, you know, if somehow they find a way of getting Trump out of there and bringing in somebody else, whether it be the other two existing candidates or parachuting somebody in like Ryan, she is going to literally switch back to being an independent. And I'm wondering just how, you know, how many Republicans will end up doing the same. And that's also, I'm also wondering whether Trump is going to stick to his agreement to support whoever the nominee is if he feels like he's been screwed over.
All right, so the party, which is famous for doing stupid things, like nominating Mitt Romney, who's an absolute embarrassment. The party is ask him to pledge to not if he doesn't win. The implication there is the party will support whoever gets the nomination, which they immediately turn their back on. So, I mean, you know, I just – this party is so schizophrenic, but the to me, the most hilarious thing is they act like they're representing some pure, some deep, profound conservatism when they're just ever since, in my opinion, since George W. Bush, they bought into this pragmatism. Anything that gets you from point A to point B or point C is acceptable. And the party is going to define what it means to be a conservative and a Republican. It doesn't matter what history or reality or logic dictates.
Well, I know that one of the things that we discussed when we were chatting the other day was one of the things that I wanted to, you know, that I wanted to emphasize was I believe wholeheartedly that the reason that a lot of these folks are going up against Trump or going against him is because they're seeing their own jobs, their own, you know, going out the window because he is not owned by anybody. That's the one thing that impresses me the most about him, is that, you know, so many times, you know, you look at certain politicians, they get in there with the best intentions. However, they have to end up acquiring a lot of money to run for office, and then they end up becoming owned by the lobbyists or whoever donates money to them. And suddenly, you know, the politician himself is only going to be, as far as for the people are concerned, is for that vote. Once that vote takes place and they are, you know, elected, then all of a sudden they're drawn into what lobbyists want them to do. I mean, because, you know, like Trump says, these people don't give money just because they like you. They give money because they expect something in return. And, you know, that's where I think that, you know, the Republican Party has somehow, I don't know, it's lost its way. And, you know, and I know one of the big things with Cruz is that he has his own definition of what a conservative is, because he's always constantly talking about how Trump is not a true conservative. I don't know whether he is or he isn't, but I do know one thing, is that he's taken this political story and turned it up on its head.
Well, you know, what Trump has done is he's gone after the shibboleths. He's an iconoclast. He goes in and he breaks idols. He takes things that people are totally devoted to, like Marco Rubio ruined his reputation by supporting the grandfathering in of all these illegal aliens. He destroyed his reputation among conservatives. It didn't at the time seem like it would matter because everybody was heading in the way of letting these people in or keeping them here and giving them a path to citizenship. Trump comes in and says, we're not even going to talk about that. We're going to kick them out first. We're going to build a wall. It changed. Donald Trump is a catalyst. A catalyst is something that you stick in an environment and it changes everything just by being there.
I agree. I believe that that's exactly what he's done.
We'll take a break. 6:51, got Phil here, and great to have him back. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Did you miss the show, Phil?
Oh, I did. I don't know about waking up so early, but...
523-1450 and 805-6180. We'll be right back.
Happiness is when you really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong being in love with someone, yeah.
All right, so where does this idea come from that Trump has to be the worst person out there? And I mean, we've got a process by which we choose our candidates, which is a Democratic one-person, one-vote process. And I know there's a few extra rules in there, but if the people let their will be known, however it plays out, and then the people have chosen Trump, who is the party to come in and say, we know better than you do, and he's not Republican enough? I mean, obviously that didn't stop Romney and McCain, who were rhinos at best. Who is, the party think that they are to come in and take away the will of the people, take away the voice of the people, and put some flunky in there?
Well, it's because they're afraid of losing their livelihood. That's the bottom line. It's going to change everything. Trump is not going to be, you know, having to bow down to anybody. And that's the bottom line. He is an independent, from any kind of groups. And he's going to be able to do what he feels he wants to do. And, you know, the thing with Trump, I think the reason that a lot of people are supporting him, and, you know, I got to admit, I lean towards him a little bit myself, is because he's thrown out being politically correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of folks don't like that because he's not so PC. Well, I think what he's doing is he's saying a lot of what the American voter is thinking and maybe afraid to say in this politically world, a correct world we live in. But he's saying what a lot of folks are thinking, and he's just coming out and doing it. And I just don't think that the Republican Party understands that. Republican Party, as far as I'm concerned, has failed the American voter miserably. And a lot of folks out there are really, you know, just fed up with it. And they look at the establishment as nothing more than the Democratic Party in disguise.
Yeah. And I mean, if your goal in fighting Trump is to see Hillary elected, shut the party down. Give people a choice so that they can have their own candidate. I mean, this idea that Hillary has to be better than Trump is on its face laughable. Hillary is a disaster. Look what she did in the Middle East. All of her actions totally destabilized that zone. You can blame that on Obama, but I don't see that blaming it Obama really takes her off the hook. And she is a terrible, terrible person, according to the individuals that know her. She only cares about power.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of reports that have come out from people that worked closely to her during her time as the first lady and as Secretary of State, and these are Secret Service,
yeah,
who have hammered her.
It just said she that she's just the rudest person and just goes up, regularly abuses the Secret Service, even though they take a bullet for her, you know. That would be like throwing yourself in the way of a hyena or something. Somebody trying to take a...
So what do you think, Kelly? What do you think? What happens to Trump?
Well, let's talk about that next hour. Got Phil here with Kelly. I just got a text. I would like to see Cruz take Scalia's seat. Is this possible or must it be a judge? It could be any attorney. And technically, to be on the Supreme Court, I believe the rules would allow for a non-attorney to be on there. But he could go on there, but he's not interested in that. And as I've said before, he has religious reasons for wanting to take over the country, which I might agree with some of his positions, but forcing it on people would be the same thing as socialism, is just forcing a bunch of leftism, liberalism, forcing a bunch of laws down your throat. 659 Kelly O'Connell, AM Massachusetts, 1450 KOBE, 23-1450 to call in, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back with Bill.
Oh, baby, love and a happiness. Love and a happiness. Oh.
All right, folks, so 706 got my old buddy here, Phil Biasquez. And anyway, we've been talking about this idea that the party is going to take it over the convention, and they're going to put their own person in. And right now the talk is on Paul Ryan, and Paul Ryan, it really isn't doing much to shut down that conversation. And in the meantime, we've got Glenn Beck's anti-Trump holy war, Washington Examiner. I've gone over this again and again. I am so fascinated, absolutely compelling. And I find it to be a complete, I mean, honestly, one of the most ridiculous things that I have ever heard is Glenn Beck standing up and speaking for God as a Mormon, and then admitting at some point along the line that he's, and by the way, yes, I have Mormon friends, and I'm sure some of them are ready to strangle me, but, it's a different God. It's a different religion. And he admits that at some point. But anyway, he's got this way of coming up with stuff that is, let's face it, Glenn Beck is probably the most listenable person on the radio. He's just got that gift. He's got timing. He's got the voice. He's got a sense of drama. Every single time you turn on the radio to listen to him, we're on the verge of another total collapse or calamity or apocalypse. All right, now hear Glenn Beck saying Ted Cruz is divinely appointed, anointed, you know, which technically means somebody comes up and puts a little bit of grease on your forehead. But check this out.
But then he says, but God has not revealed Ted Cruz as the divinely anointed alternative either. To you, Dr. Kidd, to you. To you, God hasn't revealed Cruz as divinely anointed. I understand that. I respect your opinion on it. But here's mine. I have seen this man's life. I have watched this man. I have prayed about this man. I have prayed about it by myself, out loud, in quiet, with my family, with my staff. And I happen to believe that Ted Cruz actually was anointed for this time. Would there not be someone that was in the pool that might have the right qualifications for God? Is he that disinterested in all of us? Or is it perhaps possible that just like in the Bible, people were raised from birth for a specific time? Are we that inconsequential, Dr. Kidd? Are we really not important enough for him to raise someone up at this critical juncture?
You've got to admit there's a little bit, I mean, it sounds convincing, but he's using a fallacy there, the either or fallacy. It's we either live in important times or we don't. We either live in God's important times and we are the greatest nation in the world and maybe in history. And that's not important enough for God to raise somebody else up and raise them up like a free range chicken. So, Phil, I mean, this is so crazy, but I mean, the fact of the matter is it is false. We might be a very special nation. We might be living in special times and God might dump a terrible leader on us just to punish us. What's wrong with that? Who says, why does Ted Cruz have to be, with all due respect to Donna, why does Ted Cruz have to be the anointed one?
You know, I was sitting there listening to him and I was going, you know, it seems to me, when you talk about conservatives and you talk about how certain folks are swayed by certain, you know, words, it seems kind of sometimes, you know, it sounds fake to me when you start using religion and, you know, your belief in God as the reason for the way you think. And it just, I don't feel that like there's really a sincerity into that. It seems fake. And
I'll take your word for it because I know you're a watcher of these things and it is disturbing. All right. We're on the verge of an economic collapse of biblical proportions. It wouldn't be enough, by the way, to say we're going to have another Great Depression. It's got to be biblical proportions.
Exactly.
Now, what is a biblical proportion of collapse? I ask you. Let's find out in our next exciting episode of the Glenn Beck Watch.
So the first strike of the match was the 2008 election. That's about when I started talking about the rise of nationalism at Fox. And every single person you just saw on TV was mocking me.
No, they said you were wrong.
Said I was wrong.
It's
said I was
never
going to
happen.
Bring it up. It was crazy town, everything. I'm telling you, it's coming. First strike of the match was 2008. Second strike of the match is the migrant crisis. What nobody is willing to say on television is an economic collapse of biblical proportions is coming to the West, of biblical proportions. It only takes another massive terror strike or a massive banking crisis. These sovereign nations already over in Europe, they are now charging people to put their money in the bank. They're talking about taking, try this on for size. They're getting rid of the 500 euro note. They're getting rid of the 100 euro note. We're now talking about getting rid of the 50 and $100 bill and everything will be digitized. That is to trap money in the banks. They're taking money in the bank and they're now giving you less than 0% interest. So you're paying the bank to keep your money there. What they're doing is that's basically making the poorer more poor.
Right.
So your savings doesn't mean anything. Then they trap all that money in the bank where you don't have control over it. And that's for when the next collapse comes, there's a bail. We had a bail out. Now they're talking about a bail in where they just take 10% of everybody's.
Help, my money's trapped in a bank. you know, Glenn Beck presents him. He was just jumped on by a historian named Kidd, who was not kidding around when he said that Glenn Beck does not speak for God per se when it comes to choosing a president. And but you know, Glenn Beck has offered himself up in everything but name only as America's prophet, and his theology is radically different than Protestantism. So when people are listening to this, and I know you see people in his show when they're sitting there with their mouths open, just looking at him like, you know, like you just came off of Mount Sinai.
Well, I know just after listening to that one piece there, my mouth was wide open too. I was just sitting there going, wow. You know, it's like almost like fear mongering is what he is really good at. He scares people to death about, you know, like, for example, the collapse of, you know, our economy and other things. It just, to me, it seems like he wants the more outrageous that he can, things that he talks about, maybe he feels his numbers are going to go up. I don't know.
Well, his numbers, okay, so when Trump comes up, and I had worked with Glenn's people before on a couple of books, I've mentioned that a couple of times, which I found to be, I thought it was going to be exciting, and it was just like, somebody had hired me to pull the weeds out of their yard and get it done quick, kid. And so I was, you know, I was kind of listening in. You know, I've never talked to Glenn, never met him, but, you know, just talk to his people that worked in the book section. And I just, you know, had a little bit more than average interest in what's going on over there. And then Trump said that his business model is collapsing. I started studying. He's lost all of his original executives for the most part, and the replacements have come in and then left. And they shut down. They had two studios, one in New York and the other one down in Dallas. They shut the one down in New York. But the main problem with his business model is he's running a TV show out of the internet so that you can actually track how many visitors. And he had said, I think a year ago, that he had 41 million visitors. I don't know about that, but I do know maybe a year and a half ago, but I do know now that a few months ago he had 30 million visitors and now he's down to 16. And his personal web, and that was on the Blaze, his personal website, it's even less. So, I mean, you can't not listen to the guy because whatever he says and how he says it is just so entertaining. But at the same time, do you think this is a business model for him to be attached to Cruz?
Well, you know, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't have an answer for that. I really don't. I don't know what where his thought is, other than, you know, trying to elevate himself, like a lot of these senators and folks that are now suddenly backing Cruz. You know, they seem to be jumping on the bandwagon there. Anything to get Trump out of the way, as far as I'm concerned, and that's just not right. I mean,
but,
all those.
All right, so here's my question: is, you know, America is largely Protestant. It's Catholic and Protestant. Catholics and Protestants agree mostly on theology, with a few major differences, of course. But the difference between, you know, LDS Mormonism and Protestantism or Catholicism is just extraordinary, without getting into it. But I mean, it's all, you know, if I was making a religious show and wanted to focus on Glenn Beck, I would say, is this the false prophet that we've been sent to read? You know, because in the Bible, when the people do walk away from God, God sends them false prophets to tell them what they want to hear.
That could be true. I'm not that knowledgeable on that subject, but
it's just not a religious show, but the religious elements of this are absolutely compelling. You know, it is extraordinary to hear him say day in, day out, God told me this, God told me that, God told me to do this, and I didn't know why, and I was embarrassed, and now it's all coming together, and it's like, dude, I mean, are you really, you know? So he's got this. I'll try to find it during the break, pardon me, but he's got this criteria that all religions can use to choose a president, which I thought was, I mean, that was cheeky to put it in UK language. 717 Kelly O'Connell, got Phil Yeskes here, AM Las Cruces 1450, KOBE 523 1450 to call in, 805-6180. To text, but to get your voice on the record, we'll be right back. And I'm going to try to find his analysis, and then we'll move on to the next juicy topic, which is really going after the GOP.
Exactly.
All right.
I'll be good to you. together.
We do have here Phil with us, and Phil, I don't see a positive outcome for. I tried to bring up the thing about the guidelines that Glenn Beck lays out, that even Muslims, not just, you know, Protestants and Catholics, but even Muslims can use. If you want to know what God's will is for picking a president, Glenn Beck lays it out. I just find the guy increasingly bizarre. But anyway, I don't see how the GOP, and I don't understand why they don't see this. I don't see them removing Trump from the equation, however they do it now, and not destroying a major part of the base.
Well, you know, do you think, honestly, that if it were to happen that way, that despite the fact that Trump did the pledge like they all did, to basically support the nominee, do you think that he'll splinter off?
I mean, I almost feel like it's too late. If you're going to do a third party run, you've got to go into places like Texas and Florida and have things set up well in advance. For example, I think in Texas, you have to have 50,000 people that did not vote in the primary to support a third party. And I mean, that Texas has a lot of people in it, but you'd have to have 150,000 to 200,000 signatures just to make sure you had 50.
Well, the thing is, bottom line is, let's just say that if he did do that, let's just say, for example, he did do that.
Yeah.
And he's not able to. Well, then what happens to the voters who feel disenfranchised?
I think those people don't vote Republican across the board. I mean, I don't think that you are going to do that to Trump and these people would go in and then vote for the Paul Ryans or the Mitch McConnells in the general election. Nobody is going to support the party. This is what I don't understand. People are responding to something that Trump is doing. And the idea that he's just playing to rednecks and morons is not true. There's a lot of intelligent, articulate people that are supporting him. And I was thinking about why was it last night? What does this guy have that is so compelling? And I think it is the sense that you cannot trust anybody who goes to Washington. We've seen it time again. We've been lied to so many times, number one. Number two, what people want more than anything else is they want someone to stand up for them and fight for them. And this is a guy that is not afraid to do that. I don't think it gets any deeper than that, but he's not afraid of anybody. If you pick a friend, if you're in high school or junior high, elementary, whatever, and you have one friend, you want it to be the one person in school, especially if you're a runt, you want it to be the one person in school that doesn't back down from anybody and can beat anybody up. You know, you may not want a bully, but you want someone who's absolutely fearless if that's going to be your one go-to friend, right?
Well, you know, one of the biggest criticisms that Obama has that he always seems to lead from behind. And I just don't see Trump being that kind of person. He's the kind of person that is going to go in there and, have to smash some heads together to get people to understand that he is doing the people's work. I don't know if he really feels that way. I can't read his mind, but he does say the things that people want to hear and are afraid to say, because once again, we live in this politically correct world, which I myself personally am sick of. I'm tired of, you know, being able, you can't even, you know, think anything anymore without being, criticized for being politically incorrect. And I think that's what a lot of the folks here in America are looking at Trump and saying, you know what, this guy says what's on his mind. He doesn't have all these folks behind him telling him, oh, this is the way it should be said. This is the way, you know, he says it off the cuff. And I'm just hoping that he really means what he says. It's a strange world we live in today. It really is.
I mean, it is a strange world. I'd be the first to admit that, but I just don't. I mean, people are angry that they're not being listened to. You could interview any number of Trump supporters across the nation, and they will say the same thing. The party has turned its back on us. It doesn't care about what we think. It makes decisions that are not in keeping with what I believe and my friends believe. I've supported the party for 20 or 30 years. I voted in all the elections. I've supported all the candidates. And what do I have to show for it? These people that, like Paul Ryan, who's a very, seems to me a very smug guy, who thinks that he's going to get swept into power and be president without even having to bother with the irritation of having to run.
That would be mind-boggling. Just to put it mildly, that if somebody were to parachute in like that and without even winning a single state, after these guys have been battling, you know, for months, yeah, to me, it just would be political suicide for the Republican Party if they were to do that. It really would.
And, I mean, what do these guys hope to gain? I mean, I just don't, what are the chances that someone is, you know, takes the Trump out from a grassy knoll politically, so to speak. He gets taken out, replaced with somebody else. What are the chances of that candidate then builds enough momentum to win the presidency? I think it's zero. I think there's going to be so much confusion and anger and say, not only am I not going to support this guy because he's not my candidate, but this is exactly, and I mean exactly, the reason that I'm no longer a Republican. As I look at this, I see what they're doing. It's not just corrupt. It is a complete denial of the voice and the will of the people of the party. And that's exactly why I was angry in the first place.
Well, I know that if all of a sudden, if they were to dump Trump somehow in this convention, if it goes to the convention, you're going to see a lot of folks just say, you know what? They're going to throw their hands up and say, you know what? I'm just not going to vote. And I think that's what happened with Romney. A lot of folks, well, especially a lot of Christian voters who maybe don't believe that it's, you know, that they wanted to have a Mormon, so-called Mormon in office, they just stayed at home. And I think that's why it had to be a big reason why Obama was swept in office for the second term. The same could apply here. And that's the thing that bothers me about what's going on in the Republican Party. They don't see the past history and say, look, you know, we need to wake up. We need to start paying attention to the voter, and don't want to give up. They don't want to give up. They don't want to give up their positions. They don't want to give up their livelihood. And they're going to do everything they can to stop him. And because of the fact that nobody owns him, that scares them to death.
What, have you ever heard of the dog in the manger? This old Aesop's fable is a dog crawled in this basically a feed bucket where where there was hay and the cow comes up and tries to eat and the dog growls at him and tries to bite him. And the fable was, you know, dog in the manger. You can't eat any hay, but you're going to keep me from having hay. That's what I feel like these guys are. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
Hey, Aaron. It's been a while. How you been?
I've been good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. The call is a little bit fuzzy, but go ahead.
I just wonder how long this can continue with, conservative America putting up its candidate, being rejected by the so-called establishment, or, you know, people just not voting. At some point, doesn't this lead to some kind of overall societal breakdown where you could actually end up with, violence in the streets and people just saying, screw it.
I mean, I agree that's possible. But if you look back and see how much turmoil there has been in human history, we're going through relatively peaceful days, Pax Americana, and it just can't last. I mean, I'm not saying there's going to be fights in the street, but I mean, there could be. But what I think is going to happen is this party is going to be overturned and either a new party is going to take its place. You know, I mean, the Whig Party, which was the conservative party of the old days, was displaced. And, parties live and die. And so I just think that this party can die. Aren't these people doing exactly in reacting to Trump what everybody already hates about the GOP? Aren't they just, it's like you get pulled over for a speeding ticket. You're going 70 through a school zone. You get pulled and get the ticket. And so, you flip the cop off and then you go 100 miles an hour away. I mean, you get another ticket, you get 10 tickets. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it's the whole, I'll tell you, the last 7 years haven't made any sense. With what's happened with our foreign policy, we're arming our enemies and giving them tons of money. And
yeah, but
we're not getting
Aaron,
people to do what they tell us.
Aaron, you know, at least you got somebody that you can blame it on. You can blame it on Obama and say he doesn't see the things the same way that I do because he doesn't have the same beliefs, but we can vote him out. You know, we can remove him or he's done with his thing and put somebody else in there. But what good is it if the GOP is Democrat Party light? I mean, in every way.
No, it needs to be overhauled and torn down and burnt to the ground, which is why people want Trump to do, I think, for the most part. That's kind of what they're hoping. Whether he do that or not, who knows? I mean, he's such an unknown quantity as far as actually having governable power.
Yeah, but I mean, where does this idea come from, Aaron, that Trump has to be the worst thing ever? He's worse than Stalin and Hitler put together. But Hillary,
Hillary is a person that we
can put our faith behind and vote for instead of Trump. That's just insane.
I totally agree. Let me ask you this. You look at what's happened on the left with the issues in the inner cities and how the last year or two they just, rioted and burned down little communities and all this. I mean, what happens when the other side of that coin starts to push back and doesn't take it anymore?
Well, you mean the people that are opposed to Black Lives Matter, that type of thing?
Yeah. What happens when that crowd finally awakens and gets angry enough at being, told that they're racist and told that they're bigots and told that they're this, they're rich, they're greedy, they're, yet that's the crowd that produces in this country for the most part.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my response to that is that I hope that we've learned the lesson that being ignorant doesn't bring us forward. We've got to educate ourselves. I was, in a conversation with Kathy the other day, and I had to go back and study what the founding colonies believed, which I was grateful to do. I was grateful to have the material in my library, but I was a little bit disappointed with myself that I didn't know better. But I mean, if I'm having to educate myself, I would encourage everybody, educate yourself on these important topics and let's get out there and fight from principle and let's rebuild this party or start a new one, but let's be smarter and better educated, more informed, and more persuasive than the opposition, as opposed to just being being violent.
Yeah, no, nobody wants to advocate it. But it's funny thing about revolutions is that they generally don't fester for very long; they start pretty quickly. You look over history, and it just took that one spark, and man, things get out of hand in a hurry. And it's like I don't want to see the spark. I want to see us maintain our civility and everything, but you just wonder how long we can go along the way things are before some certain event happens and people just lose it.
I agree. I got to take a break. Thanks for the call. Good call. All right, folks, we got to take a little break here. Good call from Aaron. And phones have been a little bit slow, and Phil was telling me his phones are a little bit slow, 2-523-1450 if you want to get your... And we do have one more call. Take one more call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly Connor Show. Who's this? Hello? Hello. I can hear my voice echoing in your house. Thanks for the call. All right, folks. Get it together. 734, 735 on the button. AM Los Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450 to call in, even if you want to hear me echo on the line. Isn't that from a Glenn Campbell song?
I believe so.
Yeah. And 805-6180, we'll be right back.
Teacher, walk away with victory. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, baby, love and happiness.
All right, we heard Aaron's call, and then we had a mysterious echo on the line, and Phil thinks it may have been Glenn Beck.
I believe it might have.
Lashing out. All right. So maybe he had a prophecy. I'd talk about him this morning. But all right. So where are we at in this election? I've got a little clip here kind of thinking out loud. Here is a pet. This is from Steve Kornacki, who is, I think, MSNBC. And I've got a little thing here. But what are your feelings right now, Phil? Do you see Trump as the inevitable winner, or do you, are there many more mountains to quote another classic, many more mountains to climb?
I think there's a lot more mountains to climb. I really do.
Great Jimmy Webb song, or Jimmy Cliff, I guess. There we have many. What's the name of that? What's the title of that?
Which one? The Wichita?
No. I was thinking about this song that was put out by Jimmy Cliff that was covered by a lot of other people. Rivers to Cross is the name of it. So, you know, there is some serious work. I've never seen a more ominous set of circumstances to come over than what Trump has done. And he's just incredible. I mean, he's really a talented guy, whether you like him or not. But anyway, here's Steve Kornacki on how you get to 1,240 delegates.
1,237.
And hold on a second. Here we go.
237. If you're a political junkie, then you are very familiar with that number. That's the number of delegates that Donald Trump needs to clinch the Republican presidential nomination on the first ballot in Cleveland. The question is, can he get there? Now, Trump can do it by winning 54% of the pledged delegates in the 17 states that have yet to vote. But even if he comes up a little bit short of that number, he can still prevail. The reason? Unbound delegates. These are delegates who are not required to vote for the candidate who won their state. They are free to vote for whoever they want to vote for on the first ballot at the convention. So if Trump falls short of 1,237, but still gets close enough, he can presumably make up that difference by luring some of these unbound delegates to his side. Of course, all of this is going to be determined by how well he performs in those 17 remaining states. That starts with Wisconsin on April 5th. So how could Trump get to 1,237? Well, let me show you. Let's take a look at the big board. So right now, this is a rough number, but Donald Trump right now is at, we're going to say, 755 delegates. It's give or take a few. We'll say 755. Remember, the target number here is 1,237. So let's play this out a little bit and see what it would take. These are all the states that are left. Number you see next to it, number of delegates up for grabs. Now, the first thing I could say here is there's three states here we're just going to take off the board: Nebraska, South Dakota, Montana. These are winner-take-all states. These are states that really fit the profile of places where Ted Cruz is doing well. So we're going to say, for the purposes of this, Cruz wins those states. Let's take a look at the other places where Trump could get the number. So he's at 755. Let's start in Wisconsin. It's a close race. We just talked about it. Let's say Trump pulls it out. Close, but pulls it out. That would mean, the way the rules work, probably about 30 delegates for Trump. So that would move him to 785. Where else can he look? The action's going to shift right then after Wisconsin. It's going to shift to the Northeast. The Northeast is Trump's secret weapon over the next few months. There are more than 300 delegates in these states, and these states are really good Trump states. I mean, it starts with New York, his home state, New Jersey, a winner-take-all state. West Virginia really fits the profile of a Trump state. It is not inconceivable that he walks away with 280 delegates from here. If he does that, he's sitting at 1035. Where else does he go? In May, there's going to be a primary in Indiana. Could be another close state. Let's say it's a close Trump win, 30 more delegates. Now, where are we? Now we're at 1065. Where else does he look? Let's go out to the Pacific Coast. Three states here where he could do well. There's a poll in California today that has him up 10 points over Ted Cruz there. He could take 150 delegates from the West Coast states, those three West Coast states. You add that in. Where is he now? Now he's at 1215, if I'm doing that right. 1215. 1237 is the number. Remember, we've taken these three off the board. There's one state left. It's New Mexico. If he won the whole thing, if he won every delegate there, and this is proportional, that'd be tough. He would be at 1239. Now, of course, you're not going to get every delegate out of New Mexico, but he could get a lot, and he could get very, very close to 1237. Of course, these are rough numbers. He could do better up here than we think. That could put him over. And, of course, what is the Stop Trump people hoping for? What are they hoping for? They're hoping they beat him in Wisconsin. They beat him in Indiana. They deny him the number out of the Northeast, and they deny him the number out of the Pacific Coast. So there's a lot of wiggle room on both sides. But what you see here is there is a path for Donald Trump to get to 1237 or to get very close to it. Now, of course, stopping Trump could be helped by a little cooperation and coordination between the campaigns of his two rivals, of Cruz and John Kasich. But that doesn't look like it's about to happen. Cruz is calling Kasich a spoiler. He says he has zero chance of winning. And while he wants Kasich to stay out of Wisconsin, Kasich's top advisor, John Weaver, today said this. He said, quote, Ted Cruz should stay out of Pennsylvania, New York, and New England, as John Kasich has the best opportunity to slow down and actually defeat Donald Trump there.
All right. So that is a little bit of analysis for where we're at right now. I've just seen so many ideas, though, put out there to stop Trump. It, from your perspective, Phil, where does the stop Trump argument come from?
I think it just comes from the establishment, what they call so-called the establishment, the Republican Party, and that's the bottom line. It's what people are seeming to rebel against is the fact that you know, they don't want any more establishment candidates. As you mentioned before, there's a lot of folks out there. They get into Washington with the best intentions, and somehow before long, they're you know, they become part of the establishment, and it's all about money, power, influence. When are they going to get their next cabinet position? When are they going to get in a certain position where they can, you know, control certain things? It just, you know, like I said, they go in there with the best intentions, but it always seems to just somehow destroy whatever they went in there initially for, and that was for the people. And now it's just part of the establishment. So,
but I just see Paul Ryan walk around with this, you know, smug look on his face, and I think it's a disaster that this guy who doesn't even, to me, it's a disaster that somebody doesn't run and do the legwork and doesn't go through state by state and earn it, would be just handed the job.
Well, I think if the Republican Party were to actually do that, I think that they would basically gift wrapped the nomination of Hillary Clinton as our next president. That's what I believe wholeheartedly. That if
that wouldn't be a gift wrapping, that would be a dirty diaper.
Call it what you may, but that's what's going to happen if the Republican Party insists on going this route. And I'm hoping that whoever it is gets to that number and just eliminates that problem. And what is it, 12, whatever, 47 or whatever? That would just eliminate a lot of the hassle. But I just, you know, to me, Kasich and Cruz are in that blocking mode, and they're going to do everything in their power they can to siphon off as many delegates as possible so that he does not reach that magic number. And then it'll go to.
In other words, the people who run the party don't care about the party. They want to be. They want to be either in control or destroy everything. And so I'm going to take my ball. If I can't win, I'm going to take my ball and go home.
Well, you know, I think it's more like this. I think they do care about the party that they work for, but they don't care about the voter anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's a tragedy. And I heard some guy was listening to clips of Glenn Beck doing my Beck watch and getting ready for that last night. And I heard this guy call in, and he was very rational. And he said, I'm voting for Trump. I'm not voting for Cruz. And Beck tried to talk him out. And the guy was just totally rational. And it was all the stuff that we're talking about. I mean, if you think that you're going to build a beautiful party without input from the grassroots, from the people who actually go out and vote in the general election, if you're going to deny them in the primary, you're never going to have that. What you're going to do is just prove that you're totally corrupt. And what here's the weird thing. They've been lying to us for years. They've been peeing on our leg for decades and telling us it's raining outside, and it's finally coming back to haunt them, and they're doubling down.
Yep, they certainly are. Certainly are doubling down.
Disgusting. All right, here's a dedication to Trump. Many rivers to cross, Alita Adams. 749 here with my old buddy Phil, and great to have him back. We'll be returning. What do you want to end up with here, Phil? What do you want to talk about?
Oh, I don't know. It's awful early in the morning. I'm still trying to wake up. But
you're trying to squeeze out a few rational thoughts there. We'll be right back, folks. 749 on the button. AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE 523 1450 and 805-6180 to text.
Many rivers to cross. over.
All right, so I've got some at 7:51, 7:52. I've got some headlines here for you. Priest that was captured, crucified on Good Friday. Former lover says Bill Clinton snorted coke off my coffee table. Surprised he didn't do it off her belly button. Fidel lecturing Obama. Cuba has no need of gifts from a USA. Although you wouldn't know that by going over there, from what I understand. CNN gets angry when Trump aide discusses Muslim treatment of women and tweets about that. Doctor arrested for flying rainbow flag in Saudi Arabia said he had no idea it represented gay pride. Paul Ryan is thinking about the White House, apparently. He's going to try to be primaried by somebody. 89% pay cut that started the Trump revolution is actually, that's a story I'm going to save for tomorrow. It's pretty juicy. Showdown for competition for control with Trump over control of the Republican Party with Paul Ryan. Alaska volcano spewing ash at 20,000 feet in the air. There's a ton of volcanoes in Alaska. Caveman's best friend, preserved Ice Age puppies, aw, scientists. Aw, too bad they're dead. Few more here. Thieves use semi-truck to smash into gun store, steal weapons in 48-second heist. That's what I call efficiency. And by the way, if you want to be more efficient, keep yourself busy and get more done. People with full schedule gain momentum. Not born in the USA, immigrant population over 15% in 16 states, over 25% in 6 states. And Obama promising admittance of more illegals, especially Muslims. Smuggler caught by Border Patrol 24 times, finally jailed. And the Brussels bomber was a, quote, migrant rights activist. Thank God he didn't relocate here. And U.S.-backed forces are fighting each other in Syria, what we were warned about. Parents are upset after an elementary student was taught, or students are taught about depression, divorce, and how to identify as a tranny. Would you like it if your 6-year-old was informed about what it means to be a tranny? And people are in total denial over the fact that robots are going to be taking over more and more jobs. Homeless man stabbed 7-Eleven clerk to death after being stopped for stealing a hot dog. St. Peter, how did you get here? Oh, I was defending a hot dog. Bishop to continue disruptive 3 a.m. services because that's when demons are active. Phil.
That was a lot to cover there.
I threw it out there, whether people wanted it or not. I do have some texts here. Beck's outside the trailer waiting on his white horse. White horse prophecy. Wouldn't it be a better electoral process if the winner in each received all delegates from that state? I think what they should do is get people who can't win should be asked to stand down. This new driver's license. All right, hold on. Things have become so bizarre. It's virtually impossible to find the truth. And do you have tax-free status as a religious nonprofit? All okay. All you talk about is religion and, of course, politics. Kathy, God bless you. I did a show for Kathy last Friday, and she was so grateful that she attacks me. Thank you, Kathy. Big kisses to you, too. All right, Phil, let's conclude this puppy.
Well, you know, there was something that I was curious what your thoughts were on as far as Cruz. One of the promises that he made was that he was going to hire 20 or 30,000 border agents to cover the border. Okay. Where does that money come from?
Now, who was going to do that?
Cruz.
I guess getting the printing machine going and printing up a bunch of extra cash.
Well, you know, that's the problem is that, you know, we're talking about being fiscally responsible and being part of the conservative movement, yet he wants to hire 20 or 30,000. Now, these are employees that are going to be employed for the rest of their lives with benefits for the rest of their lives, okay? Another thing that he said was he wants to do away with the IRS. I'm not a big fan of the IRS, but who's going to collect taxes if they do away with the IRS?
The idea that some of these guys are going after, is Cruz a flat tax guy?
I think he's looking for a flat tax of 15%.
So the idea is that a flat tax would be so much easier to collect that you'd get rid of the apparatus of the IRS, and then it would be just easy to collect it. You'd collect it as you go.
Well, who collects it, though, if the IRS ain't there?
I guess it's like self-deportation.
Okay. But those are just a couple of issues that I have with some of the things that he's promoting. And I just, the Conservative Party has always been supposedly about being fiscally responsible. And so many of these things, you know, they talk about the Democrats wanting to hand out all kinds of money and stuff like that and give everybody a cell phone and whatever. But when you start talking about hiring this amount of people and it's going to have to be the tax dollars, I just think that we're going to end up with a bigger deficit than what we were hoping not to end up with, you know. So just a thought.
All right. So my prediction here is that the party is going to try to use, like you were saying, Cruz and
Kasich
to block enough votes, delegates from going to Trump, and then they'll have a fight at the primary, and then they'll try to bring in somebody like, they don't obviously like Cruz, so they're going to bring in Paul Ryan or somebody like that.
Well, you know, that's the one thing that really, like I said, when we first started talking about this, how many of these folks who just absolutely can't stand Cruz are now suddenly behind him. I don't understand the logic there. It makes them look so hypocritical. And, you know, the voter, I think they think that the voter's stupid or something. I don't know. I mean, it's so easy to see that they're just, you know, playing a game here with our country and our voters. And it's really sad. It's really sad. I'm hoping that the Republican Party gets their act together because I don't want to see it disappear. But at the rate they're going, it just may.
Speaking of disappearing, we'll take you out of here with Many Rivers to Cross dedicated to Trump.
All right.
Thanks for coming on, Phil.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, and have a great day. We'll see you back in 22 hours. Ciao.